Our Bible reading today comes from James chapter 2, from verse 14. Faith without good deeds is dead. What good is it, dear brothers and sisters, if you say you have faith but don't show it by your actions? Can that kind of faith save anyone? Suppose you see a brother or sister who has no food or clothing, and you say, "Goodbye, and have a good day, stay warm and eat well." But then you don't give that person any food or clothing. What good does that do? So you see, faith by itself isn't enough. Unless it produces good deeds, it is dead and useless. Now someone may argue, some people have faith, others have good deeds. But I say, how can you show me your faith if you don't have good deeds? I will show you my faith by my good deeds. You say you have faith, for you believe there is one God. Good for you. Even the demons believe this, and they tremble in terror. How foolish! Can't you see that faith without good deeds is useless? Don't you remember that our ancestor Abraham was shown to be right with God by his actions when he offered his son Isaac on the altar? You see, his faith and his actions worked together. His actions made his faith complete. And so it happened just as the scriptures say, Abraham believed God, and God counted him as righteous because of his faith. He was even called the friend of God. So you see, we are shown to be right with God by what we do, not by faith alone. Rahab the prostitute is another example. She was shown to be right with God by her actions when she hid those messengers and sent them safely away by a different road. Just as the body is dead without breath, so also faith is dead without good works. Here ends the reading from his works. Thanks be to God.
There's nothing complicated or clever about today's reflection. I simply want to share with you some reflections and memories I have of somebody whose path I crossed when I worked as a probationer minister in St Giles Cathedral in Edinburgh, way back in the early 90s. Cosimo was a vagrant who was already getting on in age when I worked there. He was Italian, he'd been a prisoner of war, and he'd ended up in Edinburgh after the war had ended. Rumour had it that he'd been a chef during his life, but somewhere along the line things unravelled for him and changed, and he landed up choosing to live on the street. And with what was probably quite complex mental health problems. He would spend the nights very often in the shop doorways on Princes Street or on the steps to St Giles Cathedral, and he'd spend a good part of the day sleeping in a pew somewhere in the church where it was warm and dry. The Kirk session allowed Cosimo to use the church as his address. And it was by that means that he was able to receive benefits and support. The church looked after his money and gave him a daily and a weekly allowance. He was a fiercely independent man. He was also difficult, though, cantankerous, aggressive if challenged in any way. And by and large, he hated people looking at him or talking to him. So if anyone, and it was usually a visitor, tried to give him money, he absolutely went off the deep end and could become almost impossible to try and manage. He did, though, have sufficient money for his needs, and he was very often deeply and very loudly offended if people tried to be charitable. He wore every piece of clothing that he possessed, most memorably layers and layers of raincoats and pacamacs. And his feet never left the confines of his one and only pair of wellies. His fingernails, as I remember, were beyond description, and he smelt truly awful. But having said all of that, there are three pictures of Cosimo that really stand out and remain in my mind. The first picture I have of Cosimo is at communion. There were five services in the church each Sunday, and more often than not, Cosimo would attend all five. The 10 o'clock service was a communion service, and the congregation would gather in relays in big circles around the communion table, which was in the centre. Communion in St Giles is always the common cup. Cosimo always wanted to receive communion. Cathedral staff, regular members, and the stewards on duty would make a discreet beeline to make sure that they were standing on either side of Cosimo so that they would be the first to take the loaf of bread and the cup after him as it came round the circle, and so that they would be the ones to exchange the handshake of peace with him after the elements were served. And they, of course, were the people that he knew. There were visitors to the cathedral who would stand in that circle and, not taking their eyes off of Cosimo, the disgust on their faces was sometimes quite evident and plain to see. The second picture I have of Cosimo was him coming into the church well before 8 o'clock in the morning, when the doors first opened for the day. We'd be standing outside on the steps, waiting for the doors to open. And entering the big empty church, he would make his way over to the big perspex offering box. Then, digging deep into the recesses of one of his carrier bags, he would bring out a purse, and he would drop two or three coins loudly into the box. After that, making his way from there down the central aisle, he would put down all his bags once again, and then he'd take out an ancient, filthy, dirty prayer book, and he would proceed to recite his prayers out loud, echoing and reverberating around the church, his prayers in Italian. Obviously, once content that he'd done that, he'd then shuffle his way to a corner of the building where he'd go to sleep in the relative comfort of a pew somewhere beside a warm heating pipe. Exactly the same routine every single morning in life. And the third picture I have of Cosimo was at a very small wedding. The cathedral had been emptied of visitors to allow the wedding to take place with some privacy. So present in a side chapel were the minister and the American bride and groom, accompanied by the church secretary and me, who were the witnesses standing away at the back. The ceremony was in full swing when there was a familiar shuffling and muttering. And out of a dark recess of the church came Cosimo, heading straight for the bridal party. Somewhere in a corner, he'd clearly been sleeping, and one way or another had been overlooked by the beadles when they'd been asking the visitors to leave. The minister looked over at us. We looked over at him. And we all knew that it was going to go one of two ways, and whichever way it went, it was about to be a memorable occasion. Which it was, because Cosimo shuffled, complete with his assortment of bags, out of the darkness and into the light of the side chapel. He was smelling particularly unpleasant, but he was beaming from ear to ear. Three out of the five of us relaxed afresh. He walked right up to the bride and groom, and he stopped right in front of them. Then, rummaging at the bottom of one of his carrier bags, he pulled out a spectacularly battered and squashed lion's sponge cake, still in its box, and presented it to the now thoroughly bewildered bride, who had the presence of mind and the grace to accept it with a smile of thanks. If she hadn't, there would most likely have been a scene. But then, apparently satisfied that his gift had been accepted in the spirit intended, Cosmo picked up his bags and wandered away to another part of the building. I used to see people in Edinburgh cross the road to avoid having to walk past this dirty, smelly old man. And I could read the disdain on the faces of some of the visitors who passed through the cathedral on a daily basis. What right had this vagrant to disrupt their visit to that beautiful building? The juxtaposition between human poverty and need on one side, looking them right in the eye sometimes, and the opulence and grandeur of a famous cathedral on the other, didn't always make for a comfortable balance. Had a visit to St. Giles been a genteel look around a beautiful museum where nothing challenged their consciences, nothing ugly or difficult got in the way of their living, nothing pricked their consciences or served as a reminder of the way that some people have to live or choose to live, would have been so much more palatable a visit for some people. But that church was not and is not a museum. No church should be. It was a place where all sorts of aspects of human life played out. And it was the place, at least on paper for the purposes of benefits, that Cosmo called home. He was a very well-kent face in Edinburgh. When he died in 2001, that's 20 years ago now, his death was covered on Reporting Scotland by Sally Magnusson. "Capital mourns its gentleman tramp" was the headline of the time. So what did he teach me? Well, he taught me that the church can come up with creative solutions to supporting people on the margins of our communities, that we can't judge other people's lives, their faith, or their journey, that we have much more in common than with each other than we'd probably like to think, and that we too are a mixture of things cantankerous, generous, argumentative, and gracious. But especially he taught me that it takes a kind of discipline to look for the image of God, especially in the people in life who repel or repulse or anger or challenge us. But most fundamentally, it takes courage and faith to open our eyes to the reflections of ourselves that are there, undoubtedly, in the people around us. We are human first and foremost. Each and every one of us is a child of God.